The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the May-June issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're going to begin today on page 8 of Who's Who in Sports. Daryl Watts, Wisconsin Badgers forward. Her height is 5'6". She was born May 15, 1999, and her hometown was Toronto, Ontario. Watts scored an overtime goal from behind her own net against Northeastern in the Frozen Four championship game. The goal was her 19th of the season, which led the country. Before transferring to Wisconsin, Watts played at Boston College, where she became the first freshman to win the Patty Katzmaeller Trophy as the best women's player in the country. Did you know the Badgers have won 6 national titles, tied with Minnesota for the most in history? Next, we have Bradley Beal, guard for the Washington Wizards of the NBA. His height is 6'3", and his weight is 207 pounds. He was born June 28, 1999, in St. Louis, Missouri. Through 41 games, Beal was leading the league in scoring at 31.3 points per game. On January 6, he tied the Wizards franchise record for points in a game when he dropped 60 on the 76ers. A month later, Beal made his third All-Star game appearance. Did you know? No player in Wizards franchise history has ever led the NBA in scoring. Before Beal, who was second in 2020, the last Washington player to finish in the top two was Earl Monroe in 1969. And finally, we have Lucas Zelarayan, Columbia's Crew midfielder. His height is 5'8", his weight is 154 pounds. He was born June 20th, 1992, and his hometown is Cordoba, Argentina. Zelarayan was named Major League Soccer Cup 2020 MVP after a 2-goal, 1-assist performance in a 3-0 win over the Sounders. With 6 goals in 16 games in the regular season, Zelarayan, who was signed by the Crew from Tigres in Mexico, was named MLS Newcomer of the Year. Did you know? The Crew won the title on their home field, historic Crew Stadium, which in 1999 became the first soccer-specific field built for a Major League Soccer team. Columbus will play in a new stadium in 2021. Now we'll go on to page 38. Who invented baseball? In 1907, a panel commissioned to explore the origins of baseball declared that Civil War Colonel Abner Doubleday had invented the national pastime. That's why the Hall of Fame is located in Cooperstown, New York, where Doubleday had lived. This conclusion could have been a great vindication for Doubleday if he hadn't died 15 years earlier, and if he had ever claimed he had invented baseball. Alas, baseball is not really the invention of a single war hero, but, like most sports, an evolution of many games over time. If you can dodge a trolley. The Los Angeles Dodgers have one of sports' most enigmatic names, which they inherited from their Brooklyn predecessors. Nothing in baseball involves dodging, except maybe avoiding a tag or a potential beanball. Did the Dodgers name themselves after the fact that other teams love to throw at them? No. Turns out the name comes from Brooklyn's second favorite pre-war pastime after baseball, getting out of the way of aggressive trolley drivers. The name doesn't make much sense in L.A., where everyone is stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic for 4 hours a day. Sadly, Brooklyn has neither a Major League Baseball team nor trolleys now. The King's Double. Pressed to name hockey's most famous twin, most fans might mention a Lemieux or Sedin, but the real answer might be Heinrich Lundqvist. The goalie has a twin named Joel, also a hockey player drafted by the Stars in 2000. Joel is less famous in the United States after spending most of his career in Sweden's top league, but he's still playing at 39. Another legendary netminder, Pekka Rinne, is also a secret twin. Enigmatic emblems. These team insignias contain more than meets the eye. Focus and you can unlock their hidden truths. New York Islanders. Though the Islanders are moving arenas soon, their logo points to their original home, the Nassau Coliseum, in Uniondale. Notice where the turns blue. Minnesota Wild. The Wild is a pretty vague team name, but the logo does well to capture it. This animal's mouth is flowing stream meeting a line of trees. Its eye is a shooting star. Houston Rockets. The R resembles a spaceship on a launch pad attached to an umbilical tower. The logo has found renewed relevance as the Rockets aren't taking off anytime soon. In the Washington Capitals, an eagle mascot fits the patriotic theme nicely, and the shape cut out of the bottom allows it to form a W for Washington. That shape also just happens to be the Capitol Dome. Unknowable secret, number four. Look familiar? Is Harmon Killebrew the batter whose silhouette appears in the Major League Baseball logo? Many fans took for granted that he was the inspiration until the 2008 interview between the website UniWatch and Jerry Dior, the man who claimed to have designed the logo and denies the connection to the Twin Slugger. For his part, Killebrew himself thought he was the logo, and the circumstantial evidence from photos like the one above is compelling. The league itself has no official position, so we may never truly know. Coast to Coast, page 40. The NHL will soon expand to its 32nd team. But why stop there? Here are some prime candidates for hockey towns. Number one, Cascadian Conflict. Congrats to Seattle on becoming the NHL's daring new baby, darling new baby. Everyone wants to pinch your big, slimy, cephalopod cheeks, but watch out. Little brother can't be far behind. After all, nearby Portland has a rich hockey tradition. The Portland Rosebuds were the first United States team to compete for the Stanley Cup when they lost to the Montreal Canadiens in 1916. They also have an arena of the Moda Center and a great potential name, the Buckaroos, a moniker the Rosebuds adopted in the 1920s. Number two, Liftoff. Most of these proposed new NHL franchises are in the northern half of the country. That makes sense. It's colder, but it's hard for us to fit all the text on the page up there, so, Texas gets another team. Congrats. Seriously, though. Rockets owner Tim Fertitta has expressed an interest in bringing the NHL to Houston. Winnipeg has jets. Texas has spaceships. Number three, boarding party. Many of the best American players, Phil Kessel, Ryan Suter, Joe Pavelski, hail from Wisconsin. Yet the NHL is the only Big Four sport not represented in the state. The AHL's Milwaukee Admirals have a loyal fan base and a zombie pirate motive. Upgrade them to an NHL club and haunted galleys would set sail on the Great Lakes in no time, bound to raid the coasts of Chicago, Detroit, and Toronto. Turn over a new leaf. If the New York metropolitan area can support three teams, Canada's biggest city can surely support two. The Maple Leafs used to be called the St. Patrick's, and we like the idea of a new Shamrock-themed team. Three green upstart fronds take a Canada's most famous big blue leaf. After beating up on the North Division this season, the Leafs could use a new rival. Bienvenue à la maison. Whenever the topic of expansion comes up, Quebec speak up, and understandably so. Quebec City lost the Nordiques to Colorado in 1995. In the meantime, their stick and igloo jerseys have become indelible fashion symbols. Sure, an existing franchise could relocate and adopt the Nordiques' name, a la the new Jets. But why make another fan base suffer? Do you still have your baseball cards? Well, in pages 42 and 43, what makes these cards so valuable? Luka Doncic, 2018-2019, $4,600,000. Four cards from three eras in two sports. These very different collectibles have one thing in common. They're worth a fortune. Superfractor may sound like gibberish, but to some people it's the sweetest word not technically in the English language. A combination of super and refractor, it describes certain shiny sports trading cards that are one of one. In other words, manufactured to be one of a kind. One such card, the autographed Mike Trout 2009 Bowen Chrome Superfractor, made headlines last year when it sold at auction for an astonishing $3.936 million. That sale set a record that stood for about 5 months, when a 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle card sold for $5.2 million. Both cards far exceed the highest recorded sale of a 1909 11 T. 206 Honus Wagner, $3.25 million, long thought to be the rarest and most desirable card. Now another sport has gotten in on the action. A one-on-one Luka Doncic rookie card sold for $4.6 million this February. Before you run and tell your parents you have a scheme to get them rich quick, it's important to understand what makes these four cards and many others so valuable. Our comprehensive collecting guide explains all. And on this picture, we have, of course, Luka Doncic's $4,600,000 card in 2018-19, Mike Trout, Honus Wagner, Mickey Mantle. The five factors of desirability. Rarity. 50 years ago, parents threw out old comic books just like any other kind of newspaper or magazine. Kids stuck baseball cards in their spokes of their bicycles to make them sound like motorcycles. Now those same kids, all grown up, complain that they should have kept their comics and cards, which are suddenly worth money. But it's a paradox. Those cards are only so valuable because few people held on to them. Cards like the $3.9 million Mike Trout are rare because only one was ever made. But the 1914 Baltimore News number 9 Babe Ruth above and the T206 Honus Wagner are rare in the truest sense. They are surviving relics of a different era, and that makes their value more stable. Errors. The gang here at SI Kids famously never makes any mistakes. If we did, though, it would only make our magazine bigger collector's items than they already are. At least that's what we assume, following the logic of these sought-after era cards. A Frank Thomas 1990 Topps card graded as a 9 or in a mint condition sold for $84 in 2019. That same year, a nearly identical card in the same grade went for $14,400. The difference? The more expensive card was one of a series of misprints in which Thomas's name was conspicuously absent. Theories vary on how this happened and whether it was on purpose. It may seem silly to pay such a premium for what's basically a factory error, but rarity of all kinds drives collectors wild. Other errors are more subtle. Emblem Tunnel was a Hall of Fame defensive back for the New York Giants, but two of his cards misspelled his last name, Tunnel. The Russells and the Colleens of the world sympathize. A giant baseball glove is hilarious. That's never been disputed. But a giant baseball glove when it's not expected. Pure comedy gold. Most sports cards feature action shots or serious portraits. Sometimes, however, the card company has to use whatever photo it has handy. The 1986 Mickey Hatcher Fleer card doesn't go for millions or of dollars, more like $10. But $10 is a lot of coin for a not-so-famous player from an era of overprinted cards. Another goofy 80s entry worth looking up, the 1984 Fleer Glenn Hubbard. It's got a has got it all. The Philly Fanatic, a powder and blue Atlanta Braves jersey, and a giant live snake draped around Hubbard's shoulders. Cool design. Not unlike babies and certain birds, card collectors are attracted to shiny objects. Refractors, lenticular cards, and any other blinged-out pieces of cardboard were all the rage in the 1990s. The trend has endured, and now our cards' ability to reflect light often suggests rarity. The record-setting Mike Trout and Luka Doncic cards are both, to varying extents, shiny. So is the 2017 Panini Prism, White Sparkle Patrick Mahomes, and card above, which won't set you back millions, but it doesn't come cheap. Of course, there are aesthetic considerations beyond shininess. Even 60 years ago, card design was taken seriously. The 1963 top set combined bright color combinations and basic shape for a look that's both definitely 60s and timeless. Other factors that affect value appearance can be the hardest to pin down. Different cards speak to different people. But that's okay. People should collect what they like, not what they think other people want or will become most valuable. Memorabilia. Wouldn't it be cool to own a game-used LeBron James jersey? How about owning a 1 of 80 of a game-used uni? About 1.25% as cool. Insert cards are special items that are included infrequently in random packs. This element of chance inspires collectors to open case after case in hope of finding certain ultra-rare gems. The practice started with autographed cards in the 1990s, but inserts really took off with the introduction of memorabilia cards, which feature a small piece of some equipment or a uniform. The first such card came from an unlikely source, stock car racing. The press pass burning rubber set included real rubber from the tire of famous drivers' cars. Other sports cards have followed suit, including that $4.6 million Luka Doncic card, which features the NBA logo from his jersey alongside his autograph. Some cards are pretty out there with their choice of memento. In 2010, Upper Deck released baseball cards embedded with real insects. Hey! Trading cards, diamond designs. A card company goes old school with a new wide-ranging set. What happens when you cross an artist known for something he calls bright mirrors with a national pastime? You get a fun, colorful baseball card featuring Brave star Ronald Acuna Jr. flashing a horrifying grin. Last year, Topps decided to go old school. The company asked 20 artists to recreate 20 of its most iconic rookie baseball cards. After the success of that program, Topps has broadened the idea to celebrate the 70th anniversary of its first set of baseball cards this year. The company asked 51 artists to reimagine old cards, combining a player into Topps' design from the archives, which is how we ended up with Acuna appearing on the 1990 Topps card. The program is called Project 70. Every weekday, three new cards drop on the Topps website. They're available for 70 hours, and Topps prints only the number that have been ordered. With the artist doing about 20 designs each, the program should run through the end of the year. The idea of having cards drawn or painted is nothing new. Until the late 1950s, when photography took over, that's how cards were created. Some of the Project 70 cards are ultra-realistic, while some play athletes from one era onto modern-day cards. One such result is the 2018 Babe Ruth. As for the Acuna card, it was drawn by Alex Pardee, known for scary, grotesque images rendered in a colorful, playful aesthetic, hence bright mirrors. Pardee cites Garbage, Pail Kids, and Tales from the Crypt comics as his influences. For this project, he was drawn to the aura of the young Atlanta All-Star. "I like the way he always seemed to have fun," says Pardee. "He always smiled. He just seemed to be like a positive, energetic dude. So I wanted that to be my leadoff card." Contest. Draw your own. Think you can do better? Draw your own card for your favorite athlete, including their name and team name in the design, and send to artgallery@si.com with the subject line trading card, and you could win big art prizes. Foil and steel. Cash and Card Unlimited. NFL linebacker Cassius Marsh turned a lifelong hobby into a business. Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker Cassius Marsh is sitting inside the space that will soon become his very own trading card store. Cash Cards Unlimited in Westlake Village, California. It specializes in Magic, The Gathering, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon, along with various sports trading cards. Just inside the door, in front of a custom mural featuring Pokemon and Goku from Dragon Ball Z, is a glass display case of some of his big hitters, like a first edition Yu-Gi-Oh! Box. I've always recognized the value in Magic cards, says Marsh, who on social media also calls him the Foil King, named after the shiny, foil-like texture that special Pokemon and Magic cards have. All of this stuff, it's art. For the new generation, these cards are similar to buying a Picasso. If all of this seems out of the ordinary, that's the point. Magic, The Gathering, and Pokemon specifically have given a lot to Marsh, providing him with comfort as a young child being raised by a working single mother. Now he can properly elevate the hobby's aesthetic beyond its roots inside Dimly Hyde. Now he's played Magic with the likes of former Seahawks wideout Doug Baldwin and Taven Bryan, the Jaguars' 2018 first-round pick, who Marsh crushed because Byron was playing some janky, not teared up, not foiled out decks. People anticipate you're going to get picked on and made fun of, Marsh says. It's made out to be a kids-only thing, which I just don't agree with, man. Marsh's first trip to a card store came when he was 11 years old. His mom gave him $5 to spend at a hidden fortress in Simi Valley, California, and he stumbled on a pair of grown men playing Magic. It seemed to dovetail neatly with his other fantasy interests. I was in the house, bored all the time, and my mom worked a lot. Being able to ride my bike to card store and hang out and have a couple of guys that could interact with me and play a game I enjoyed, that was huge for me, Marsh says. When I come home from a long day, being able to open packs and collect and pull new cards I've been wanting and just sitting there trying to build out the most perfect deck, falling deep into that world is definitely something I look forward to, something that I crave. Holding all cards, still on page 47. Marsh, near left, and business manager Nick Nguyen want to elevate the collectible card shopping experience in a high-end boutique setting. Moving on to page 48 through 51, we have a picture here of Joel Ayai, Gonzaga Bulldog shooting guard. Statement of intent. Ayai began the season with a bang, putting up 15 points and 9 rebounds against number 6 Kansas. He wasn't the flashiest player or the best NBA prospect on Gonzaga's Final Four team, but the native of France might have been the most important. Mark Few wasn't sure. The Gonzaga basketball coach went back and forth, watching the new guard bumble through practices. Yes, Few could see the talent, the versatility, the flashy that made Joel Ayai a legitimate prospect at the French National Sports Institute, but Ayai had arrived at school early in 2017. He was young, skinny, and by his own admission, overwhelmed. Initially, I didn't know that he would be good enough to play here, Few said 4 years later. Ayai was good enough. It turns out not only to play at Gonzaga, but to start to become an unlikely catalyst for a team that went through the regular season with a perfect record and made it to the NCAA title game. He wasn't the Bulldogs' leading scorer, rebounder, or passer. He's not likely to be selected ahead of his more celebrated teammates, Jalen Suggs, Corey Kispert, or Drew Timmy at this summer's NBA draft. And yet Ayai might have been the Zag's most important player. Suggs refers to him as our motor. Few notes that Ayai does not possess our standalone skill that would make him a bona fide lottery pick. But the coach adds, man, he just helps teams win. Few points to Gonzaga's season opener against Gonzaga, Kansas, on a neutral floor. The Zags had positioned themselves among the NCAA tournament's top contenders the previous spring before the pandemic shut down all sports. Few describes telling his team that they would not be able to compete for that elusive national title as perhaps the hardest moment in his 3 decades at Gonzaga. He wondered how his team would react, especially after COVID-19 scare limited them to 2 days of practice beforehand. Few needed someone to seize control, and then along came Ayai, scoring 15 points on only 9 shots, grabbing 9 boards despite standing 6'5" and adding 2 steals and 1 assist. In other words, it was classic Ayai, spearheading a victory that announced the upcoming special season, and not by doing one thing, but by doing all of them. Long road up. Ayai's improbable path began like that of so many Gonzaga players in another country. The guard grew up in Bordeaux before catching the attention of French basketball officials, who added Ayai to their development pool at age 16. He chose to follow in the footsteps of Ronny Turiaf, who had played at the French Institute before going to Gonzaga. Ayai picked the Bulldogs in large part so that he could develop. He redshirted his first season, concentrating on adding bulk to his slim gym frame. Listed at 169 pounds as a freshman, he's now 180. He hoisted hundreds of jumpers every day, separate from practice, where he studied the Gonzaga way, learning to cut and slip behind screens and play unselfish basketball. He also added an element of levity that would endear him to his teammates. When they teased him about his diminutive stature, he'd dunk and flex. Eventually, the player that few worried about instead worked his way into the team's rotation, jumping from an average of 5.6 minutes a game in his redshirt freshman season to almost 30 last year. We were low on guards, and it was like hanging out a dishwasher wanted design, says Travis Knight, the Bulldogs' performance coach. He hit big shots. He made the right play in the big moments. He also has this unshakable positivity, not just in himself, but with his teammates. All of a sudden, the thinking changed, like maybe this will work. Suggs, on his pre-pandemic recruiting visit to Spokane, couldn't help but notice the skinny guard who would not stop yapping and play defense like he enjoyed the less glamorous work more than scoring. "It's crazy," Suggs told the Zags, "but Joel is always in the right spot." I can still recall the meeting when last season ended after the tournament was canceled. "That was a really, really huge downfall," the guard says. Still, he kept in contact with his teammates. Though they didn't win every game, the Zags won plenty with Ayai, and for those observers of this Gonzaga team, and especially those who know him, how unlikely it was that Ayai would emerge as a pillar of its perfectly built roster, his role won't be forgotten anytime soon. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.